This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. No, no. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby by the lights. Mercy, mercy, mercy. All things ain't what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more do you from me? Can't you stand?
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Real good changes, and sorry that Polka had to have a cold today. I heard his voice there and listening to him earlier. Good show, Hawaii Potpourri. Anyway, you can get this on carolcox.com live if you incline to listen to it over the internet or having some static at your radio. Carolcox.com. Go to the button and click on Listen on Air and follow the steps there, and you can hear us in every nook and corner. So today we're going to be talking about radiation and its impact on people, and more specifically, people that actually we rely on greatly in our daily lives. You know, if people don't pick up the trash, you want to cause a community to go up in arms and talk about rioting. Is that miss one trash day, let the trash man miss one trash day, and all hell break loose. But do we ever think about, you know, we talk a lot about management and refuge divisions in the city and county and what have you. And it sometimes it does not reflect good on the workers. But have we given any thought to what these men and women are exposed to and what they go through? We've talked about it some while back about contaminants and what have you, but some of us take so much for granted. And one of those things is that the health of the workers, you're inclined to think that the government is actually taking care of the workers and their unions and what have you, and everything's copacetic. But here's the problem. You and I are having an impact on people's lives, their families, directly, indirectly. Have you ever given any thought or had a relative or a friend who was treated for cancer and had to take radiation or iodine or what have you to treat their cancerous tumors or thyroid problems? And what happens to that waste when they urinate or they have gauzes? That goes into the trash can. And what happens there? Well, believe it or not, there are people out there, people, the workers that drive the trucks, that work on the back of the trucks, are actually being exposed. And we're going to talk about this in depth. And I have Miss Yolanda Caheli. She is a widow now. Her husband is deceased. Mr. Caheli was a refuge worker, drove trucks, and developed cancer. And we're going to talk extensively about that and her problems and what she's been struggling with just to get the city and county of Honolulu to react or respond to her so that she could basically, not much can be done for her husband because he's paid the ultimate price, but she can't get documents that would enable her to let her doctor determine if she or the rest of her family or others are impacted by this. So we're going to bring her on now. Good morning, Ms. Caheli. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Yes. Can you introduce yourself? And I've given a little bit, as you may have heard there. Go ahead and introduce yourself, if you would, please.
My name's Yolanda Caheli, and my husband is a refuse worker for 38 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2012, I had lost him to cancer. And before we, as he was sick in the hospital, our doctor, after running all the tests, had come back and asked him, you know, if he felt that his sickness was due to his job. And he had expressed yes. And when he had told the doctor yes, the doctor had asked for his employment records to see, because he had told him that he was exposed to radiation on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been trying for the last year and a half to collect these records so that I could show our doctor and to have him, you know, put closure to my husband's case.
Mm-hmm.
But I've written his supervisor at the job, who is Donald Gum, and he had directed me to David Shirishi.
Mm-hmm.
And I had contacted David Shirishi, I would say about three times. My last attempt was an email I had sent to him on February
mm-hmm.
of 2012 about getting the hot load records for my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And till now, I have not received anything from their office.
You say February 2013, right? You shared a receipt where it says here, the subject of, to David Shirishi, who is, by the way, one of the top officials, was or is, because I understand it hadn't been confirmed that he has retired, but is again going to return. This is reportedly will be returning in a capacity of 90 days to get that golden parachute, things that Ms. Caheli's husband and others don't enjoy. The system apparently takes care of you. But Dave Shiraishi would be one of the people you refer to, and it says here, basically, you're asking for the hot loads, records of the hot loads, and that was on February 12, 2013, and you have not received, did you get any response, first of all?
Nothing.
Just
nothing.
Let it fall. And this, again, is about you attempting to get records so that your doctor, at the time it was regarding your husband, right, who was still alive, correct?
Correct.
And yes. They didn't respond. The doctor, would this have afforded him better care or a different treatment or something? What do you, with that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He would know more, you know, what my husband was exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing. I didn't get anything. I even had gotten a referral from friends to go to lawyers, but the lawyers couldn't do. You know, all I'm asking for is for the records, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because this is concerning health.
Right.
You know, it's our health, too, that I, you know, I fear for. Because mm-hmm. if he's been exposed to these things, so have we through him.
Right.
Because there has been no, you know, he would be exposed today, and then he would come home in the same clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that affects everything.
Mm-hmm. And so he would come home like many, so the listeners would know. I've been out there, and I've actually documented over the years these incidents, some of the incidences that were where a load is picked up at a residence or whatever. Someone disposes of materials that are contaminated with radiation, radiated isotopes. The workers come along, pick the can up or whatever its contents is contained in, put it inside the truck. Now the truck is radiated, contaminated, so are the men. The process is they are supposed to, they being the city, once they identify this, and they identify it supposedly in theory by a radioactive detector or Geiger counter, which is affixed at the various dump sites, supposedly now. And they're supposed to be maintained. Obviously, you would want to maintain them. But we found that they were not, and some of them are actually explained that they don't. The city has acknowledged that there are some of them are not working. So the workers are exposed, and they're supposed to then, once discovered, park that truck, not dump the load, and let the load get inspected by Gamma Ray, a company called Gamma Ray. What is an actual company name? I have it here. You there?
Yeah.
What the actual? You've dealt with them here. There's Gamma. Let's see here. I had it circled here. You know the name of the company that inspects the trucks?
They go by Gamma, I was told.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a company called Gamma. There's a gentleman by the name, Mr. Frick. But anyway, they're supposed to inspect these, and once they give the all clear, then it's Gamma Corp is the name of the company. And once it's all cleared by them, supposedly, if it worked this way, then the trash could be dumped or what have, or get rid of, and the truck would be decontaminated in theory. But the men, what happened to the men? So, Ms. Kahele, your husband did inform you that he had many of those incidences. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And so your intentions were to try and obtain, because by you just claiming, I guess, and I understand what the doctors, by you claiming that, I think I got contaminated or my husband got contaminated with this, You don't have any real proof other than, so you were just simply asking for documents, which would be public records, that you could give your doctor, correct?
Yes.
And you got nothing?
No. You know, I didn't even know these records were public records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was trying to follow, I guess, protocol, you know, where I went to the supervisor, to the director. And, you know, I even went to the union
mm-hmm.
to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
you know, after these lawyers said, you know, they couldn't do anything, and even the union hasn't, you know, gotten back to me. Mm-hmm. I've been waiting, too. You know, it's been a year and a half, and mm-hmm. nothing. I haven't received anything from anyone.
Right. Well, we're going to see what we can do, and I hope the listeners out there can share in some of the concerns, because you going out and working, you didn't sign the contract as an employee to be subjected to such conditions and then indirectly or inadvertently subject your family and friends to these conditions. But you and I, we've talked about this a brief bit. I want to go back to an article in the Star Bulletin so the listeners can share with them. Half of it is just silliness, and you would think, let's say we talked about public records. We'll get past that point and say that the more pressing and more important reason would be your husband was ill. He was sickened by something. He had cancer. And this was a matter of life and death, not public record in your case, right? They could have given this information. I mean, we can't say what it would have done, but at least we know they didn't give it, and that's horrible. So public records for me would be, okay, I made a request, this Carol Cox Show, but you were there in and being impacted right then and there, and they didn't have the sensitivity amongst themselves to, or weren't sensitive enough to disclose this information to you and your doctor. But let's go to this Star Bulletin article that was written on March 13th, 2004. I'll let you have it in your hands there, if you would. Let's go through that and go ahead and read some. It was by Mary Vorsino, and I tried to find a couple of stories, or at least one story that we did on KGMB about the same trucks during the same time. Go ahead if you have that article in front of you.
No, I don't right now.
Okay. Well, here, I have it. The radioactive dumping is under city review. A truck was allowed to unload despite triggering an alarm. A top city health official says he will review why a trash truck that set off a radiation monitor alarm twice at Keihe Transfer Station yesterday was allowed to dump its load anyway, breaking disposal procedure. So, number one, the records you were requesting, they have some of the records, and the State Health Department should have some of the records, and Gamma Corp has some of the records. Now, Gamma Corp told you, as you have communicated to me, that they would give you the records. Could you share with us what that conversation was or what was said?
Yes. I've done the investigation myself, and mm-hmm. I had called the place, and I've talked to one of the workers there. His name was Jay, and I had explained the situation, and he told me that, yes, David Shirishi, the city and county does have records of those reports, and he has records, but he wouldn't be able to release the records unless I got permission from David Shirishi.
Mm-hmm.
He would be willing to, you know, and there would have been a surcharge for the research and the copies,
mm-hmm.
but he would have been able to, and I also had stated that in that 2012 email to David mm-hmm. about that, and I had no response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this article goes on. Several refuse workers who drive through the station daily allege that the lapse was not a first. City Environmental Services Director Frank Doyle said the source of the radioactivity yesterday was linked to a worker on the truck who had undergone a medical procedure that included a radioactive substance. The radioactivity did not present a public health risk, he said. Yes. You there?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You.
I can barely hear you.
What? Okay. Hold on.
Carol? What the heck?
Did we just fade out or earlier or what?
Hello?
Yeah. Try call back again.
Carol, I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, just try call back if you would. Yeah. She can't hear me. Are you there now?
Yes, I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, just go ahead and talk. If you can hear me barely, I don't have... Try call back if you would.
Yeah. Okay, I'll try and call back.
Call back, thank you. Okay. Anyway, this goes on. Frank Doyle, as we know.
Okay.
Okay, you're back?
I can hear you better.
Okay. Well, just remember we're on live, so if whatever you say, don't get frustrated.
Sorry. It's like the phone just went...
Well, it happens. It's technology. But
okay.
We have a bigger purpose, so we'll get past it. All right. So anyway, I'm reading this article. Continue on. Frank Doyle, as you know, who was the environmental director, environmental services director, and it's held now by Lori Kahakina. So here's the deal. What's aggravating about this, and just downright insulting, while they were holding, I didn't know that they weren't giving family members this information, especially when they were sick, knowing that they were sick, and the doctors making requests. But they were also hiding it from the public. And the state health department, by the way, is complicit in this whole act. They're a noise and radiation branch, the arrogant bunch of people. I won't say what they are, but they run and they lie, and they say, oh, we have everything covered. And yet, in this article, workers are saying it happens daily, stations where they don't get readings, or they dump, get a reading and go ahead and dump. But refuse collector Hensley Lopez confirmed his medical last test Monday included a small dosage of radioactive substance thallium 201. But he also said that he had driven past the radiation monitor from Tuesday to Thursday without alarming the alarm sounding. I'm sure that the radiation couldn't hide in my body, he said. I was kind of concerned that I hadn't set it off earlier, end quote. Doyle and others said the discrepancy, which may have been affected by, listen to this, folks. So the problem is, David Shirishi, if this is true, gets to come back 90 days higher, whatever it is. Frank Doyle got a job with Hart now. Nice, juicy job over there. But if this is true, this is what Doyle said. Look at the nonsense that they toss out when they're dealing with people's lives. Doyle and others said the discrepancy, which may have been affected by how fast Lopez was driving past the monitor on the different days, is not cause for concern because the radiation levels at issue are so low. Well, that's funny. If he had gotten treated earlier, you would think it would be hotter. And now, keep in mind, folks, as Jolanda and I are talking here, Ms. Kahele, what Doyle represented is just one big lie. And everyone should just be ashamed for promoting this kind of lie. And that is, these stations are the monitors are at the scale house. So when the people driving the trucks, there's a ramp. You got to drive up the ramp, a slight incline, and then you got to stop and you got to weigh that trash. So you see the nonsense. It's just gobbledygook, and unfortunately, the real problem, the reality is that there are workers out there that are being impacted. They're citizens, and when we'll talk later how they just recklessly park the truck in an area should be isolated from public and other workers, but they stick it in the same area, and the public is able to just drive by and breathing and expose to these trucks. Go ahead. You have anything?
Yes. I do know what you're talking about, because I know there were times that I've gone to my husband's yard and the truck would be parked across from the maintenance place in public area where everybody's driving by. Uh-huh. And it's supposed to be a hot truck.
Yeah. Well, I have some pictures posted up of this incident. Actually, believe it or not, we have from 2000, we've been following this issue for many years. 2003, I took pictures, late 2003, 2004. As I said, there was a story done on KGMB at one time on that, and I couldn't find it in archives, but we'll look it up. And it's a sad commentary about the whole practice, how they hold so little regard for the life of the workers and the health of the workers and their families, as well as which transmits into we as citizens having to be exposed to this.
You know, and we don't even know that. We don't know that's happening.
Yeah. And thanks to you, we're going to know it now, because I've tried, and many times people do get sick, and they're fearful that they'll get harassed, and they if they get injured on the job, they say, I talk to you, but somehow they'll do something. The personnel office or somebody will do something or cause my check or something because I'm on light duty or whatever it is. So we've really never had anyone to really come forward and talk. But here's another statement in this article. The bottom line is that we normally, quote, we normally hold the truck there. In this case, the load was dumped, he said. I've got to find out why that was done. I'll have to follow up, and I will. In the meantime, they wouldn't even give you records years later requesting, and we can't conclude now. I don't want anyone to say that we're playing doctors and saying for sure or with certainty that your husband was sickened by these incidents. We're not going to go to that point, but he was sickened, and we do know that radiation was on the truck. We do know that he had complained about it and was exposed, and we do know that others were. So we're speaking from that aspect, correct?
You know, yes. My point is, my husband was the one that had, you know, expressed this to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he told him that he felt it was dog-related.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I am just going off of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to find proof, you know, it's like, just let us say, you know, he had said something, it had opened up, you know, a door to the doctor of, you know, and the doctor wants to know if yes it is or no it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and without records and information, the doctor can't make a decision.
Right.
You know, so we're left, I would say, in limbo. You know, there's no satisfaction or closure to this issue.
Well, we'll try and bring some closure and try and hold them accountable, because it's the right thing to do, especially when, I mean, let's back up a bit. Your husband or any worker goes to work unsuspectingly along the curbside. There is a container. They don't know that one of the residents or someone is ill at that resident, and some of you that are out there that are sick, and have your family to at least notify. I know it's you're concerned with privacy and you don't want anybody to know that you're sick. Call the city refuge department and let them know that you have a patient or a person that is being treated with thallium or some other radiated isotope, and that you are disposing of it. At least give a courtesy. Those of you that, even for myself, if I find that I'm in that predicament, I think I owe it to the workers to simply call. Well, I don't want to put a big red X on my trash can to say that I'm someone in my family or someone at this residence is ill due to privacy, but I think I do owe it to be private to call the Environmental Services Department and inform them, so that when the truckers or the drivers or the workers come, the refuge workers come by, they then know that they can handle that or put on the proper suit or be treated properly. We can't be reckless as homeowners and as citizens. But on the other hand, We don't see anything, and I'll ask you, Jolanda, Ms. Kahele, do you recall your husband telling you that they educated them or held trainings? Have they?
No, nothing. For me, you know, when he would come home, actually, you know, the first time I found out about this was in 95, 96.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he came home saying he was first exposed to it. And, you know, I've seen, even as a student, you know, in school, whenever they deal with these things, they do have a process, you know, a shower that you need to go on, get under and decontaminate and stuff.
Right.
But, you know, these men take it like an everyday thing, you know, and it's like, to me, I feel like they don't think it's affecting their health.
Right, and if the agencies, Frank Doyle and Lori Carquina and others, or the mayor or whoever it is, city manager or that oversees, or the state health department, or OSHA, or HIOSH, God bless their soul, the most useless agency in the world, out there protecting human beings, and what do they do here? Nothing. They sit on their butts and cover up for the government. But the reality is that, as I was going to say earlier, your husband unsuspectingly comes home. He's been affected.
Carol, I'm going to have to call you back again. Doing it again.
Okay, do that. Anyway, this gentleman or a worker gets contaminated, goes home, walks over the carpet in his shoes or his pants or his clothing.
The rest of this article that you're reading.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When I was reading it last night, you know, about how Hensley person, you know, because of his treatment, you know, they feel that he affected these other two men, that they were detected at the fire station when they went to get themselves checked.
Right. And they blame it that the Hensley Lopez he contaminated the workers. But again, this is day after it. And what did they do to address or to monitor? Let me ask you this. Normal circumstances for people that are going to come in contact with this, and I think by now the city had enough incidences that would warrant this process, to give them a button to wear, one of those radiator detectors, and after so many of the bioaccumulation that might occur in your body, it would only so many rams or what have you, and I'm not a physicist, but or an engineer about this, but this button would tell you about how many of these rams or whatever you have been exposed to annually. And there's a certain acceptable limit on the HIOSH, or not HIOSH, but OSHA and what have you. Did they have a button like that on them?
Nothing. Nothing. In fact, that's what the doctor was asking for. And, you know, I couldn't say anything because I didn't have anything to show him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that they don't have any protection gear.
Right.
You know, when my husband would come home and say to me about these loads, I would be, you know, in shock because, you know, he would tell me that the gamma people come down in these protective gear, you know, with radioactive equipment, and I'm looking at him like, all right, you know, they're coming down in this stuff to check the load, and you're stuck in that truck till you empty the load.
Right.
You know, that's hours before he empties the load.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're in this...
Right.
...contaminated truck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with no gear, nothing. You know, not even protection for your back or anything because his back is facing that.
Right, exactly. He's a driver and his back is right there, but... You know, so many things come about here that reveal themselves of the reckless abandonment that is occurring on the part of the city managers in allowing this. And it, immediately they should do something. But apparently, as you say, I've witnessed, the men are working, they get exposed, the truck is pulled aside, it sits there for a couple of days or whenever, if they decide to do that one, because public or myself was following and I had learned of it. But if, then the gentleman that comes to inspect it is wearing a suit. If, in fact, Frank Doyle knows that this material in, on these incidents has occurred and this stuff was dumped, guess who was exposed? Me, as a person who would drive up there as a citizen to dump, which is open to the public, and the workers who went ahead and that works at the facility at the transfer station, they too. What about the Wabanala Gulch? Imagine the whole chain of people that that are being impacted, and solely because the city wants to save money, or it hadn't played a placed a value on an importance of people's lives. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
So, you know, I was going to get on back to this article because I saw it and I thought I could say a thousand things, but this article is revealing and. I'm thankful that we were able to find it. But the article goes on, rather than accepting the truck's trash, supervisors at the transfer station should have called in a city contractor charged with finding and containing the load's radioactivity. But I know at the same time, folks, Frank Doyle and everyone else was lying to me, lying to everybody else, and they were not. I even drove to the Hawaii Kai side over there to the office that I was trying to, the one that they told me that it was there. And they too told me, well, we could give you the information, but it has to be approved by the city. So these public records, they refuse to give them out. They're lying. They're hiding the fact that men are exposed and the citizens are exposed. But Ronald Frick of the Gamma Corp, the article says, which handles radioactive trash for the island's two transfer stations, said he had not handled any calls at Kihei yesterday. Imagine that. It goes off, then the men are exposed, they discover it, yet no one called the experts, as Doyle was saying in the article. Isn't that funny? One big lie after the other. Once isolated, contaminated waste at the station is supposed to be stored until it is no longer radioactive, Doyle said. Health officials say radiation alarms at the stations average about one per month. But yet, they were talking about it, but you asked for records and they wouldn't give you any records. You there?
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, yes. You got any other comment there?
You know, also the my call me curious, but you know, I would ask about, are there readings, you know, when it's first detected,
mm-hmm.
and when the truck sits for a week and the gallery people come down and check it, are the readings the same as when the truck was detected, or does it drop?
Right. Well, you know, the half-life, they say that the exposure and what have you, yes, it clears up after a while and goes to lower levels, decay. But the problem is the people that are receiving it earlier, imagine, it's the bioaccumulation that
yes.
is of concern. So it's not as if the light shines on you and then you walk away, okay, you're now no longer lit up. These isotopes, if you ingest them, they can linger in your bones or get in your marrow, I'm told. And that presents a problem. It's the accumulating effect that is the problem. And I'm just looking at this. It's the health officials, but several refuse workers say there have been similar incidents when radiation alarms were set off and supervisors told drivers to dump the load anyway. So here's a problem. Even if they gave you the records that they have, it apparently, based on what the workers are saying and some of the information that I know, it still won't reflect accurately. It will say yes, he was exposed, and yes, these incidents have occurred, but it won't have a total.
Right.
Because this article and Doyle and others and the workers are saying, many of them just went unreported. So imagine that. If you think this is to be taken lightly, Google this issue. Even simple diapers, adult diapers that have been contaminated or used and has radiation material, radioisotopes, is of concern. San Diego talks about it. Alexander, Virginia, they talk about it. The city officials, and they're worried about it. But there's another quote here. Everybody has set them off at one time or another, said Lopez, a 16-year veteran of Refuge Division. He said he has dumped materials that set off radiation alarms at KHA three or four times over the last 12 months. Mike Hikulea, of a city garbage collector for 25 years, estimated that three to four of his trucks each month have shown traces of radiation, and none of them have been isolated. Almost all of the KHE station's materials are sent to Kapolei's H-Power plant, which has its own monitors and will not accept materials with radioactive traces. Okay, we understand that. But then, is that calming for you to learn, or you by now you really probably want to get your hands on those records, right?
Yes.
But what do we do? You're going to actually file a UIPA request this again with the city?
Yes.
And the state. And what I learned just recently the other night, speaking with some of the workers, I was told that at the end of the day, and you might want to look at and make a request to this, amend that request that you're going to send in, and say that you're looking, you'd like to see the logbooks, because I was told each truck, when it returns to the yard, the driver indicates that the load was hot. But I warned you, one of the things was sometimes when the supervisors want to cover it up, they just tell them don't put it in. But some did write it in. And here's the thing. So you could ask for the logbook. One of the things, if they were to go through the proper procedure, they would park the truck and show up back at the yard, because they'd have to leave the truck where it is scheduled to be isolated, and show back up the yard truckless, so they would have to explain where the truck. So there's reason the supervisors and management would know that these hot trucks exist. You follow?
Yes.
So I don't know. I think that.
Thank you. You know, every bit counts, and it helps. You know, especially because I'm looking for answers.
Yeah.
You know, I want an answer.
Yeah. Well, if any of you got any comments or questions or a little insight on this, please feel free to call 524-1080. I'm with Ms. Jolanda Kahele, who is the spouse of a deceased Mr. Kahele, a city worker, and we're talking about the potentials of exposure to the workers, the refuge workers, and other city workers who are exposed to trucks that have been contaminated with radiation. So, anyway, there is a couple things that will fall through the cracks on this, and you and I talk briefly about it. Even if the perfect world scenario existed, here are some of the problems that I've seen and witnessed. A truck drives to a residence on its normal routine route to pick up trash. They pick it up, but on that day, they get diverted because H-Power plant is closed due to maintenance or some fire or what have you. So then they're diverted to the landfill. So then the landfill is not recording. At the time, in previous years, I don't know what they've done now. They may have come to their senses and feel guilty and did something. But imagine, so those incidences of exposure will never be recorded. So when they say it's minuscule or it's simply not enough to worry about, how can they guarantee us that, Jolanda?
That's a good question, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't even believe that. Even, you know, what the article says about radiation in low doses.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, can I read the ending part? However Frick said, we've calculated the potential doses to the refuse truck driver compared to what people are getting on average daily. It's small compared to that, okay? Mm-hmm. Small amounts of radiation were found on all three men who were in the truck, prompting fire officials to call in the health department. I mean, you know, that's just what they say, small amounts.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the fire department had called in health officials for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Takata's hazardous materials crew later determined Lopez as the cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, it's sad. This article, I mean, does not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it sounds like they're covering it up. They're trying to make it look small so the public does not get worried or, you know, or families. But yet, look, it, even in small doses, the fire department called in the health department.
Well, welcome to the world of corruption and sleazy management. That's what it is. They don't give a darn about public health. The Department of Environmental Services, that's like the old joke, the military intelligence. I mean, while it's a joke, I think it goes deeper and cuts deeper than just a simple joke. This is an action. It's contrived. It's a conspiracy of sort where they know they have an obligation. The state health department, HIOSH, they have standards that they operate by. When they say, oh, just a daily dose or a small dose, yeah, but the accumulative effect. And they know that, and they're not speaking to that. And they know that they can't gauge how much these men are exposed to, right? So when they make some dumb statement like that, that's just a way of lying. They're covering for one another. They have our trust, and so they violate that trust. That's the problem. And they expose us to a greater risk and a greater hazard, and plus their lies. We have to live with their lies and the exposure. That's sickening in itself, right?
Yes, it is. You know, I feel for the public workers that worked for the refuse department before my husband,
mm-hmm.
you know, and these widows don't even know their husbands probably were, you know, contaminated by these isotopes, these radioactive isotopes.
Mm-hmm.
And
go ahead.
And, you know, This article, you know, talking how they try to blame Lopez for contaminating the others. I mean, you know, Takata said the other men had likely come in contact with Lopez's radioactive sweat.
Right.
Which is why they also had small amounts of radioactive on their bodies. You know, were they sitting on top of each other?
Well, you know,
we're rubbing up against each other. I mean, for that sweat to happen, you got to be close to the person unless he shakes himself, you know, and it flew on top of them.
Well, you know, it could be all about brotherly love. I mean, but the sad part about it is the fact that the city would lie, would manufacture or offer that in advance, such nonsense. You know, that in itself. So what then happened if he radiated them and him and they were rubbing together? How did the trash get? Did he also hop in the back of the truck and wallow in the trash and go, hey, brother, well, let's have a good time? You follow?
Yes. You know, how did the truck get detected?
Yeah.
You know, was he the main resource for that truck to be detected? You know, no. I don't.
I remember that incident, and I actually drove to the place and photographed and all. But the thing is, yes, an individual having radioisotopes will set off an alarm. That's known. But the biggest concern here is that the lies that are being told and what the excuses that are being made, they're acknowledging, yeah, well, the supervisors did, in fact, go ahead and let it dump, even though the alarms went off. I don't care if they were rubbing elbows and hugging and high-fiving one another and sharing sweat or swapping spit. That's not my concern. My concern is that the agency is responsible for picking up trash every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing repeats itself. Those threats repeat themselves, and they're not acting to ensure and to protect the workers or the public. That's what's really troubling, and I hope that in the long run, I don't encourage you suing taxpayers or something to bring some justice, because if you advance this, we are going to benefit. And I hope that I can offer some assistance, and I don't do legal advice and all of that, but if there's any way that I can find an attorney or suggest someone to you, or I'll help you look through the book or something, but if any of you know a lawyer out there that is willing to sit and listen to Ms. Cahilly regarding this and give her some directions, please call her. You have a number that anyone can or email or something, someone can reach you if they're listening?
Yes, I have an email. You can reach me at jncahilly@hawaii.edu.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to continue this subject in the next hour on talking about radiation and all, with talking about this and Fukushima and the concerns that we're seeing, and like that too, everybody's downplaying it. But if what I'm hearing and what I'm reading is true, I think my concern is heightened now, because once I see, I didn't know that you, as a citizen and as an impacted person who have a husband that's deceased, couldn't get records. So they talk a lot of garbage, but when it comes down that your husband is sitting there consulting with the doctor and you're making a request of the city to provide incidences or records so that it may, well, I mean, I don't know if it, what impacts it would have had on the treatment or if it, but the fact is they didn't give it or even respond to you. That's shameful. So if you'd like to call back in the next hour, and it's going to be about 10:05, and we'll be back. All righty?
Okay.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you calling me.
You're welcome. Alrighty. Thank you.
All righty. Well, we'll be back shortly, and this is the Carol Cox Show.
Thank you.
9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.
Ah, yeah. It's real. Put it down. All these old crime things. Homeless. The world is crazy, boy. It's like this. It's the way it is. Heavy out there. It's heavy. I'm really such a bad child. Did I deserve to get hit with boards and whooped with extension cords? Did you forget that I was your creation? And all I wanted from you all was love, hope, and motivation. Son, you're disrespectful and you're talking back. Get out my face, kicked me out the house and wouldn't even let me plead my case. Now I'm homeless and I'm freezing like the morgue. Only thing keeping me alive is the Lord. Needless to say, it's times like this I'd rather be locked up and drinking water out my hands and eating out of garbage cans. Can I come back home? How could I? Son, you're on your own, why should I?
Some things will never change, that's just the way it is. Nobody's even concerned. Some things will never change, that's just the way it is. When will we ever learn?
3 years from now, huh? I think I'm gonna be straight. I put my name on the list for Session 8. Tried out for the army. But I was flat footed, didn't do no harm to me. Cause I was used to it. If I apply for some work, let's make a bet. I get denied cause I don't know about the internet. What do you think we need to do to change about this nation? Need to provide more jobs and better education. Nuclear weapons should be stopping crimes. Already got enough to blow the world up 1,000 times. The birds and the bees, deadly disease, teenage pregnancy. STDs.
Some things will never change, it's just the way it is. Nobody's even concerned. Some things will never change, it's just the way it is. When will we ever learn?
Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. I hear sirens. Oh, that's the couple down the street. Domestic violence. Either them or the little girl in 306. She's always telling everyone that she gon' slice her wrist. I guess that's the way it is in the life of sin. Well, you'll probably end up dead or in the pen. But my family ain't no better than the next. My auntie Brenda took her own sister in for writing bad checks. And save up to try to hit you where it hurts. Knowing they the biggest hypocrites in the church. We need to give our minds a bath and do some scrubbing. Stop the hate and start the loving.
Some things will never change, that's just the way it is. Nobody's even concerned. Some things will never change, that's just the way it is. When will we ever learn? Some things will never change, that's just the way it is. Some things will never change. It's just the way it is.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show.
right here, KWAI, 1080 AM. Again, you can catch us at carolcox.com live on the Internet podcast, as well as streaming. So, you know, next week is an exciting day. There's a parade schedule, and it is the Martin Luther King parade, and stands for good things. And I have Marsha Joyner going to tell us about it. And next week, next Sunday, I hope to have Representative Byron Rushing and his wife Frida Garcia. They're from Massachusetts, and Mr. Rushing is a state representative there. And so hope you tune in and go out and join the parade.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, Carol.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
It's the following week.
Okay, the following week.
The 19th.
The 19th, not this Sunday, but
no, the 19th. The 19th and the 20th, yeah.
Okay, and so okay. Tell us about this so we can drum it up.
All right. First is the Friday, January 17th at noon, mm-hmm. on the grounds of the Iolani Palace, the Royal Hawaiian Band will do a concert in honor of Queen Liliuokalani and Dr. Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. The reason that is a special day, of course, is the day of the overthrow, January 17th. And it's also, so we have done for annually a tribute, A, to our host culture and to Dr. King, because of the fact that they were both people of peace whose lives were notably lacking in peace. You know, what they did to the Queen, what Martin was about, the assassination of Martin Luther King, both of which were trying to do for their people. Mm-hmm. So it works to have that concert, and they do it every year. And it's free, so anybody that works in town that's off at noon, or even if you don't, make it a point to come down and see the concert. It's really a wonderful opportunity.
And that's January 17th?
January 17th at noon. On the grounds of the Royal, at the Palace, yeah.
Okay. And Mr. Rushing is going to be here.
Oh, he's going to be here for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And he is the master of ceremonies or the...
No, he's the grand marshal of the parade.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, do people get involved? Is it too late to put a...
No, go to the web page. It's never too late.
What's the web page, real quick? You have it?
Hawaii, it's MLK-dash... Okay. You'd ask, wouldn't you?
I have it here. I can pull it up.
It's MLK-dash... HI.org.
Yeah, I understand. For us teenagers, it's difficult nowadays.
Yeah, it is. Because I click on, I don't have to type it in anymore.
Right. It's like, what's my number? I don't call myself.
Yep, I don't call me, yep.
It's MLK dash Hawaii spelled out .com. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you folks can join in. And it means a lot to everybody. We've seen just recently issues of civil rights, as I arguably some say it's not civil rights, but nonetheless, it was worthy of being granted the same-sex marriages. So.
The marriage equality, and for people that say it's not, this is also the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
And the Title II of the Civil Rights Act, and for anybody out there that wants to Google it, please do. Because it is about public accommodations, and it is in that Title II that says the state has to grant the same rights to every one of its citizens.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do that.
Yeah.
Everybody. You cannot. And in Title VI, it says if the state takes money from the federal government and does not grant people equal rights, they got to give the money back. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that Senator Inouye made sure that Hawaii got the lion's share of the money.
Mm-hmm.
So, if for anyone that says that that is not important, they need to look at the things that came out of the Civil Rights Movement and the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
so
that's...
Let's keep going real quick. Sunday, January 19th, Representative Byron Rushing and his wife, Frida Garcia, will be guests on your show. Mm-hmm. And that afternoon, we have the annual candlelight bell ringing ceremony at 5:30 at the Nagasaki Peace Belt. And that's on the grounds of Honolulu Hale.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you.
And then Monday, of course, is the parade and the Unity Rally.
And the parade.
And everybody is welcome to come. We want you to be there, everybody.
Where does the parade start? What location? Magic Island. What time again?
Well, the step-off is at 9 a.m., okay. And Bill always makes sure it starts on time. So if you're going to join the parade, you need to be there at 6 or 7.
Okay. With coffee and donuts.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all righty. Well, thank you, and we'll talk again next week about it and give an update.
So. We'll keep going.
Aloha.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So how relevant is that to today's show? I've always been bothered and troubled by many I've heard and from both sides of the aisle that, quote, this Martin Luther King thing, we need to get over that and all of that. And I'll remind all of you that some of us are successful. We start out and we tell stories how we start from nothing and we were in a battered relationship of husband and wife, and just we come from different angles and we learn, we succeed. Some of us are successful and some are not. But one thing we all have in common is the Civil Rights Act is something that benefit us all. All of you that came to America to pick the bricks of gold that lay in the street that you heard of, to get here and to be able to pick the streets, the bricks from the streets that's made of gold, you enjoy those same protections that the Civil Rights Act provide. It's an interesting thing. So I was told that the Constitution really doesn't apply to foreigners. But then once you're here, the Civil Rights Act do. So those of you that take it lightly, and all the works of Martin Luther King or Dr. Martin Luther King and those unhappy, restless black people that were out there fighting and thin-skinned and sensitive and with chips on their shoulder, I'd like to remind all of you that while it may be the image that you have come to conclusion that that's what we as people, black people, struggle and we're always recalce about these issues, just be reminded, if nothing else, go away with knowing that we and others, not just blacks, but other minorities, Latinos, Asians, and all, we worked hard to get this. And the question is, why did we have to work hard to get it? It should have been, this is America, if we all know it the same way, we should have shouldn't have to get out there and protest. Shouldn't have to get bitten in the butt by a dog. Shouldn't have to be putting up with tear gassing and murder and lynching. But the reality is it did happen, and so for those of you that like to downplay and thumb your noses at this and look over your shoulders, if we people of color, and not just people of color, many people, as I say, everybody benefited. And imagine living in a world where there is a lawless society where people can be worked for 10 cents an hour or put in sweatshops. Or imagine living in a world as you drive down from Tantalus from your ranch and your big modular home and beautiful laid out with. Imagine having to drive through people that couldn't get medical care or people that were disabled and couldn't catch a bus or just couldn't get. Imagine that world. Well, I believe that just based on that, the cohesiveness that this act and the work of Dr. Martin Luther King and others, but we say Dr. Martin Luther King, but all of us, the people that were freedom riders from the North that came to the South and many other places. And I would submit this, based on what
I have witnessed and why I'm motivated to look into the Hawaiian homelands. I've said to you on this show, one of the most vivid reminders of racism that I see as an adult is right here at our doorsteps in Hawaii, the way they're treating the native Hawaiian people. It was the act on the war on poverty, the failed war on poverty that we were blamed for and wanting something for nothing. But we were emerging from slavery. I mean, you may think that it's an excuse, but we were emerging from slavery, which lent us a lot to poverty and hardship. And many immigrants that came here and working for nothing and in the fields to make others rich. So the America that I know, I'm proud when I see and hear, and I'm always moved to hear Dr. Martin Luther King's speeches or references to him, because it sets that, it's a beacon of hope. It says keep your eye focused on that, and we're all going to treat one another good. But right here, we may not know it and come to terms with it and accept it, but the structure, the government, the way we see it right here in Hawaii is as about as racist as you can imagine. We have people living on the street. We herd them like dogs and cattle and sheep, and we treat them that way, and they are citizens of this country. They're human beings. And so imagine if the governor in all of his decisions, and imagine, and we give credit to Mr. Danny Noy, but yes, a lot of money came here, but then we also see the money that came displace many of those people. So I don't know if it's good or bad. Maybe it's ask the people that's sleeping on the beach and in the ditches and in the bushes, ask them how they cherish or how they hold Mr. Danny Noy or Senator Danny Noy. But again, I wasn't going to get into this, but next week I was going to chat about this, but I thought I would talk about it briefly, because I hear and see a lot of people that think that the Civil Rights Act is a black thing. And I will tell you that what I know about America, I've had some Asian friends, or they think that it's actually a black thing. And I remind them what I know about the America before the Civil Rights Act. They didn't care about anybody. It was white and black, and in between was of no consequences. So just be reminded of that. I'm not trying to inflame and incite you to go out and riot, but take a second look at this. Reconsider your thoughts and about this. It's one big happy family if we make it that way. So I've just BMWs and Mercedes-Benzes, if that's your success, and think about the next man. That's why I played that song. Things will never change if we think it's a struggle is assigned to one people. For the gay people, lesbians, and LGBT, that community, turn back and come back and focus on now we got you and we fought for you to get your rights, and observe those and preserve those. Don't forget us little guys here. All of us weren't out there chanting, we don't want this. We think it's wrong. It's against God. We want it. We worked for you. So turn back, and the game isn't over yet. There are Native Hawaiians that are being impacted every single day, health-wise, medical-wise, financially. Land that is set aside for the Hawaiians, and they're being ripped off. And I mean ripped off in the most racist behavior there is. The same things that occurred in Mississippi. The governor has assigned incompetent people to run the agency, the DHHL. And he knows that if he has it broken up top, that he can take and rip and strip anything he wants to. He can strip mine, all the resources, so to speak, by inserting people that are incompetent, that are not committed to anything but to the boss. You might call it something else, poor management. But I know, in the bigger scheme of things, this is a concerted effort to inflict injury on the native people, continue to inflict. It's already been inflicted, but to continue to inflict it, and then have the gumption to smile. You know, when I see the changes, I want to see the governor go down and march and be a part of the Martin Luther King parade. He's everywhere but there. I'd like to see that. Send a message. I'd like to see the governor speak specifically and tell us he is going to hold everyone accountable from this day on based on the revelations about the DHHL. And so if we do that, that's how we wipe out racism. And I don't believe in this issue about abusing the guest host culture. That's no. It's racism. And you're doing it to a people that does not deserve it. I'm not speaking for them, because I know when I speak in these terms, some of them say, oh, well, you know, we don't need you. Well, that's okay. I speak with my vinegar, and so be it. But I would say to you, go join the parade. Be party to it. Participate, because it's a lot of things to celebrate. And I was... This coming month, because of Dr. Martin Luther King, as you know, he went to Memphis to do what? To lead a protest and a march. That's where he died. And what was the focus? Refuse workers. So I believe that it's appropriate, and especially Ms. Kahele calling in and talking about it and sharing her story, but that in itself, when you figure out, look at it not from a racist standpoint, but then if you get the same results, I think it's fair to at least have the right to talk about it or suggest that it is, because there are certain parallels. When you look at the composition of the men and the education of the refuse worker, then you will understand. You look at many of them are people of color. Many of the men, their education, lack of education, or high school and what have you. But is that an excuse to treat them and subject them to conditions that you wouldn't do? We get upset about sweatshops when we learn about sweatshops in China. Yeah, we get really upset. Oh, we're not going to buy any more Tussirootsies from there, or Elmo was made there. We're not going to buy anymore because, you know, they're down there working people in sweatshops. Oh, and, you know, Indonesia, oh, they got sweatshops. Oh, but right here amongst us, we have a city agency, state agency, two state agencies, and a federal agency allowing men to get up in the morning and leave their families, go get on a truck, go out and service the community, doing the people's work, and in turn subjecting them to dangers. Not looking for a solution, and then hiding the information. If you're just joining us, we talked about radiation on aboard refuse trucks. So, this is what's going on in this town, and if you don't like that tone, you know, I understand. You haven't had the number of occasions that I have had where you're taught in today's world to be positive, think different, don't always raise the race issue. But the problem is, while we're following that line of thought, we see that conditions or the byproduct of racism is amongst us. So whether we term it bullying, racism, or whatever, the impact is in the degrading of the human qualities. That's the problem. The inhumanities that we see inflicted on the homeless or the conditions that we see. So this thing with... The trash pickup. pickup and trash services and the refuse pickups and the drivers. I can't bring myself to understanding it. In so many years, I tried to chase it, and I know it's there, and you don't hear anything about the trucks. But we do know one thing, that many of these situations repeat themselves. More cancers, more patients, more home treatment. And how are we guarding against that, you see? But here's an article from Boston.com. This was written in 2010. Cancer patients sent home after treatment with radioactive iodine have contaminated hotel rooms and set off alarms on public transportation. A congressional investigation has found they've come into close contact with vulnerable people, including pregnant women and children, and the household trash from their homes has triggered radiation detection or detectors at landfills. Now, this is a congressional. And look how the city, I read you that article in the Star Bulletin some in 2004, March 13th. You see that. The Representative Edward Markey, Democratic of Massachusetts, says that the problem stems from a decision years ago by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to ease requirements that thyroid cancer patients remain in the hospital a few days after swallowing doses of radioactive iodine to shrink their tumors. Quote, there is a strong likelihood that members of the public have been unwittingly exposed to radiation from patients. Markey wrote Wednesday in a letter to the NRC that details finding by his staff. This has occurred because of weak NRC regulations, ineffective oversight of those who administer these medical treatments, and the absence of clear guidance to patients and to physicians. The letter coincides with the NRC meeting Wednesday. But anyway, about 40,000 people a year develop thyroid cancer, which generally responds well to treatment. Certain types are treated by swallowing radioactive iodine or iodine-131. It concentrates in the thyroid, but small amounts are excreted. And anyway, just laying this out so that you'll understand the connection. It wasn't something that we were dreaming up with Ms. Kahele and what have you. And while we don't want to draw conclusions that the exposure, her husband being exposed to these incidences or radiation through these methods is cause of his cancer, I go back to say that the agency, while the doctor treating her husband was inquiring and made requests for those documents through Ms. Kahele, the city and county of Honolulu refused to even respond per Ms. Kahele. So anyway, this document is really interesting and telling, and it's nothing new. We know that it was happening, but if you get the inactions on the part of the NRC. So imagine the inactions or the willingness to lie on the part of the HIOSH or to absolutely do nothing, just lethargic in their actions. They sit on their hands. They do absolutely nothing. When you put a camera in front of them and a microphone, then they'll lie. They'll downplay it. They minimize it. Not being challenged with asking the following question or the follow-up question. Okay, you say that this thing, the supervisors allow this to happen. What are the consequences? You don't see that kind of action. You don't have those kinds of questions. So, accountability. So, who amongst us would allow that? Who? The people that are in the system, and are they saving us money when they don't protect the workers? Are they saving us money when they fail to train the workers and alert them? Do we save money when we fail to campaign or get a public notice to the doctors and to the patients to at least not just discard recklessly this material in the trash cans? So just if you take a stand back and look at the entire situation, it's not just one act that helps me draw the conclusion that something's wrong here. It's the entire process, the failure to go back and address all of this, put things in places, making sure that the Geiger counters are at the transfer stations. But go one step further, because by the time they start their route, let's just say if they're in Waianae and they pick up a route, they got to make it all the way back to the dump site. So imagine, you're exposed. Why not have a Geiger counter aboard the truck? They make them. They're rather cheap when you come to human lives or compared to the cost of human life and the hardship that's experienced by the families that are impacted who are sickened or potentially sickened. Imagine. So why not put a Geiger counter aboard or a sensor aboard each truck? Because in other words, if you only rely on the truck getting to the transfer station, and then you determine the how many hours does it take to be exposed to that. So they make it to the transfer station and beep, 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 beep. Well, beep, beep is too late. They've already been burned, burned, burned. So that's how I draw these conclusions, why I'm adamant about the, and why I'm so foul-mouthed about the government. It's not the single act. It's that chain of events, and then they get them, when caught, they'll stand up and minimize it and tell the biggest lie as if they're on top of the world. And then they get their sister agencies who comes in, like the State Health Department, and will tell a bigger lie. And just throw out any kind of garbage, pardon the pun, and in turn tell you anything just to have a sound bite. Media is happy with that. Not asking questions, and then leaving families out there to just fend for themselves. And I do know that on when we discovered way back in, I don't know, 2001 or 2000, I don't know the exact year when we discovered all of the hundreds of tons or thousands of tons of material buried illegally at Waipahu, at the old incinerator site. And as a result of that, one thing led to another, and I found that many of the workers were there living and breathing in a facility that was shut down by the EPA, forced to shut down because of dioxins and furans and all of that and the burn. And many of those people that worked there died of very different types of cancers that I contacted many of the families, and it was shocking. And so as a result of that investigation that I conducted, had some medical tests done for, and hair samples drawn from, and all from many of the workers to see if they had lead or furans or dioxins in their blood from working in that facility. But it's the only thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Protect the people. And that brings me to the next subject, again, radiation. And I was asked around Monday, I was in conversation with someone that says, well, why you never talk about the foreign things? Well, the problem is we can talk about foreign issues, but in order to get something done, you got to have your senses about you and the balls to talk to your local officials. But if you're afraid that your local officials are going to retaliate against you or going to come and do you in or kill you, then I don't want to hear the foreign stories, because you got to start at home at this local level to stimulate. For example, Fukushima. Well, we know now there's this big talk about the Japanese companies there that handle the Fukushima. Lied to us, didn't give us information accurately, didn't give the world body information accurately. Okay, got that. And, oh, it's going to drift this way. Okay, I got that. I understand all of that. And this is why I don't engage in these long, drawn-out conversations and the theories and about something happening over there across the water. Because at some point, once we find and we've ridden this subject to death and talked about it over and over, about the foreign aspect of it. Someone amongst us must go and speak directly to the local officials. I know it's difficult because it's, hey, brah, you know, or, hey, you might drive down the road and you might think that they'll call the police and have them to pick you up, or they'll go check this or check your records. You know, that's a sign of a coward. If you got time to talk about what's going on abroad and all of that, and you're not willing to come back here and then stand and knock on the door of your local officials and say, oh, by the way, now the rest of the world is telling us that there's going to be a plume and it's migrating toward Hawaii. And we anticipate the articles now. This is not me talking. This is UPI wrote an article, Fukushima plume to reach U.S. West Coast in months. Measurable increases in radioactive material study prolong exposure for California lasting 10 years. Hits Hawaii in, listen to this, in early 2014. May already be surrounded. Okay? So, okay, now we got the conspiracy. We've pointed out that the companies over there in Japan didn't tell us the truth, but what are we going to do here? Well, the same people that will lie to you and have lied and do nothing, the health department, the city and county of Honolulu, EPA, is assuring you that they have their watchful eyes on it and they have their hands on the pulse. They know what's going on. Yet, you go out there, and they've told you, assured you, oh, don't worry, it's not contaminated. They don't know about the fish. They're recommending sampling fish because, here's this, UPI wrote an article in August 28, 2013. It was Fukushima radioactive plume being tracked toward U.S. West Coast. And the radioactive plume from the 2011 Fukushima nuclear disaster will reach U.S. shores within 3 years of date of the incident. Australian researchers say observers on the west coast of the United States will be able to see a measurable increase in radioactive material 3 years after the event. Researchers Eric Van Sibiel said in an ARC released Wednesday, quote, however, people on those coastlines should not be concerned as the concentration of radioactive material quickly drops below World Health Organization safety levels as soon as it leaves Japanese waters. Wow, isn't that funny?
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show.
And how much did he get paid to say that?
I don't know. I don't know, but it's painful to read it. But again, here, eddies, this is the physics or auric. Eddies and giant whirlpools direct the radioactive particles to different areas along the U.S. West Coast.
Yeah.
So, although some uncertainties remain around the total amount released and the likely concentrations that would be observed, we have shown unambiguously that the contact with the Northwest American coast will not be identical everywhere, said Dr. Vincent Rossi. Chef water, and here's another quote, chef waters north of 45 degree north will experience higher concentrations during a shorter period when compared to the Californian coast. The plume will be forced down deeper into the oceans toward the subtropics before rising up again along the Southern Californian shelf. Eventually, over a number of decades, a measurable, otherwise harmless signature of the radiation will spread into other oceans, basins, particularly in Indian and South Pacific oceans. And it goes on to talk about, but again, how...
Let me comment on one thing that they... Okay, so he says it's going to be pushed deeper into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's look at biology 101. Okay, mm-hmm. Everybody listening went through this in high school. Biology 101, especially if you live in Hawaii. The plankton along the coastline is where the radiation falls.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so the plankton absorbs the radiation. The little fish eat the plankton, the big fish eat the little fish and absorb the radiation. And then the big fish, like the tuna, they swim from coast to coast across the Pacific constantly, eating the little fish who ate the plankton, who ate the radiation. So, and it goes deeper into the ocean as the article says. So the deeper fish eat, and guess who we eat? The big fish that ate the little fish, who ate the plankton, who ate the radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And they said there's no problem.
Well,
obviously they don't know anything about the ocean.
Well, this is what happens when people learn, they become educated. And when I was in college and in school, rarely did anyone say, well, here's the knowledge, here's the book, and we're going to teach you everything there is in this book, and we're going to enhance your ability to receive more information and process it. But rarely do they say, but in the process, along the way, we want you to incorporate ethics with this, concern for the other man or the other woman or other human beings or the earth. They don't tell you that. So what you end up getting is statements like this, because there's one thing that's conspicuously missing here, and that is, of all the science and the chefs and the 40-degree north latitude, here's the problem. They never speak of the bioaccumulation, as you just talked about, in the food chain. But in the human beings, get a few of those isotopes in your bone marrow and see if a little or a lot makes a difference.
I can tell you firsthand it makes a difference.
Yeah.
But I was just appalled at how little they seem to think that we, ordinary people, understand.
Mm-hmm.
When it first happened, I listened to Dr. Bescher
mm-hmm.
on ABC.
Right.
He came from CDC, and now he's the expert on ABC, saying, oh, well, that little bit of radiation for children won't hurt.
Right.
I could not believe that this man said, and I haven't watched him since then.
Well,
that little bit of radiation. He doesn't understand that little bit of radiation can take years, 30, 40 years to show up.
Yeah.
They don't get that.
Well, I think... this, in my opinion, my observation here is this. We're not going to get the truth at all because, you see, we have nuclear power plants here, too. And the nuclear industry is going to do any damn thing they can to downplay it. And they're going to minimize it. And we are stuck with the results. And we're, you know, even the power plants here, if we had one, or in California, I'm sure their governor and everybody else is being lobbied to downplay when articles are written, to downplay when we should be up in hand. But if you were to call right now and try to call and find out who do you call for, matters floating out here on the coastline or drifting. Guess what? You won't get an army of people. There's no real professional concerted effort. There's no posting. We don't know what's being found. There's no monthly reports that are, if there are, they're hidden somewhere. But we need to have constant monitoring, especially with these. They're admitting that it's going to drift here. They know. They now know it and admits that. But then they're omitting the fact that they're not telling us what they're doing to ensure. Whereas the state says, we're monitoring it. And the EPA says, we're monitoring it. And if you know the staffing of the EPA, they're not monitoring a darn thing.
Well, okay, so we monitor it, then what?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I know it's coming, you know it's coming, everybody else does. I've seen the pictures you've taken of the big stuff that you've pulled in out of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no secret it is coming. And, you know, every one of those submarines we have in port,
mm-hmm.
that's a nuclear power plant.
Right.
Every ship that's in port is a nuclear power plant. Every
yeah.
one of them. There are no ships, Navy ships now, that aren't powered by nuclear powers.
Yeah.
So how many do we have? How many nuclear reactors do we have in Hawaii? How many ships are in port?
Right. And there's just so much that these articles, when they, the first thing I look for is how are they going to downplay. They're going to quote someone, says, it's coming, but it's not going to be that bad. But he didn't say for people, and especially take Hawaii, for example, sustainability is a lot of the people, substance, right? They're out there sustaining themselves by foraging, by eating limu, by eating the fish, by eating the kala, fish that are directly involved in consuming plankton and seaweed or ogo or limu. And you follow. So,
and that's where the seaweed, and when that stuff falls, that's where it attaches to.
Yeah, and
those kind of things.
And so the issue here is the downplaying of it. And see, if you don't go out and collect information, then you can't be asked for it, and you can't be held accountable for not taking an action. But if you just tell them, we got your back. I don't know if you've experienced that in life, wouldn't you? Someone says,
yeah.
Don't worry, I got your back. We got your back, right?
Yeah, sure you do.
When your government tell you, we got your back, you better run. And you better you better go buy a snorkel, a radiation mask, a Geiger counter, and a arsenic pill, so that, because you can't rely on anything they say nowadays. Nothing.
If you remember when we first started the fight, 1987, about the transshipment of chemical weapons to Johnston Island, if you remember that fight.
Oh, yeah.
So the people that wrote all of the documentation about how safe it was from Tennessee. What's the name of the company in Tennessee? Oh, God, I can't remember the name of them now. But they did all of the documentation. And I asked this guy, Tennessee's totally landlocked. I said, have you ever been to the ocean? And he looked at me, because they paid for this trip. Oak Ridge, Tennessee. So the government pays for them to come out here to fight us, saying it's okay to move chemical weapons. And when I asked him, did he know anything about the ocean, the way the ocean moves, the way the fish swim, what the fish eat, and what we eat, the same thing I just told you. He looked at me and I said, you're little kitties. You're a little cat. Eats tuna out of the ocean. That's what they put in these cans for your little kitty in Tennessee. Have you ever been? And he had never seen the ocean. Didn't have a clue how it moved.
Except
what he read, you know.
Well, what I just draw these conclusions because I don't see there's these so-called agencies that got our back, so to speak. I see how just handling the trash trucks, the refuse trucks, the minor radiation that's found in those occasionally, and you can't get a straight answer with them. So imagine saying anything that would alarm or cause people to rethink the use for nuclear power plants. So I believe if we got to be ensured that that does not come into play or does not continue to be part of the approach to this, I believe we got some serious problems. And the rest of the world is alarmed and alerted, but I don't see any fanfare or anything here in this state. I just don't see it.
Well, they tapped it down when we were able. They had an opt-in for any state that was affected by the nuclear contamination when they were doing the testing in the Marshall Islands. So right after that, they put aside money for people affected in the Justice Department, not in the general fund, but in the Justice Department, for every state that opted in. Guam opted in, Utah, Nevada, all of those states. The one state that was affected and did not opt in, thank you, Senator Inouye, was us. They could not admit that we had some nuclear contamination because of tourism.
I guess so. It's good for the tourist business because everybody could get a good tan. you never, the way they think here. But anyway, I'm going to bring this one to a close. But the, real quick, did you read Volcanic Ash this morning?
Not yet.
Oh.
I will.
You've just missed half a life.
You've just blown the whole day. I will go do it right now.
Well, hold your horses here, but
tell,
no.
Tell me about it.
Last night I was sitting watching, and there was a piece on KGMB, and there was Brian Schatz. Oh my goodness, I almost mispronounced his name there. But anyway,
okay.
I forgot this is radio, but
yeah, okay.
It's Sunday morning. But anyway, imagine the state's favorite son. You know, I just love it. And then I saw David Shapiro's article there, and I thought, how fitting. This is the state's son. We cherish him, Mr. Barack Obama, who I love to see walk out of that White House like nothing to know. I'm the best feeling man on the planet when I see that image. And you know what, though? They're going to put his library down to the guy that their favorite son, the presidential library, they're offering him a former landfill. You know, the Kaka'ako.
Kaka'ako is on landfill. Yeah.
Landfill. And then you got a boat yard there that all those contaminants are associated with that. And then remember the bus barn with all the contaminants mm-hmm. there? And then remember all of the city garbage trucks that used to be right there, too?
When I worked for the city, we used to have to take the car down there. That was a corporation yard.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to take the cars down there to get them gas.
Yeah. That's
and
why.
That was in the 70s.
That's what I love about
rubbish.
You read that Dave Shapiro's Volcanic Ash, and I thought it couldn't be said any better. They'll attach the names to anything for attention to get the world body, because they're not innovative here in this state. All they believe in, hire your cousin, hire your brother, hire your mother, fire any stranger that comes in with anything that's going to make sense or new ideas. And then in turn, off of the president. If the president took that spot, and we won't even talk about the hyperbaric chamber where there was many fluids there, and
yes.
the Look laboratory that was there for the ocean.
But they built the Children's Discovery on that land.
Hey, I'm just saying to you, I offer these things to say, because I'm not cynical. It's just that...
No, you know what? You know the definition of cynical is...
No.
It's an optimist with experience.
Yeah, or mine is they're going to put us little people in the pool of cyanide if they could, just to entertain themselves and make money. That's what cynicism. They don't care.
Did you see Chris Rock yesterday?
Uh-uh.
He said, yeah, I work for minimum wage, and that's the way of your employer saying if I could pay you less, I would.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Minimum. Well, anyway, yeah. I'm going to get off.
I know you've got to get off, but... I was tasked after someone heard me on your show, asked me to call you and invite you to the, you and your wife, to the NAACP dinner. So,
the NAACP, what is that?
I'm not going to say it on air.
Oh, do they exist?
It's on, yep, the web.
Oh, I've
the dinner is on Saturday the 18th.
Okay.
And I was tasked with inviting you and your wife.
All righty. Okay, well, I'll get the greater details from you, and we'll...
Okay. So now I said it on the air, and everybody else that wants to come, it's on the NAACP Facebook page.
All right.
But it is Saturday the 18th.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha. Anyway, folks, I'm going to get out of here, and thank you for joining me. It's Happy New Year's. We're going to do a lot of good things, and hey, it's the message, not the messenger. So we'll see you next week.
Thank God. You of a woman. Girl, not to try to hide. You didn't try to hide your love. Oh, this other guy. No need to explain.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.